This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. December 7th, 1941, November 22nd, 1963, September 11th, 2001. It's been long debated how much warning America had of what might happen on those dark days in our history. But many experts are already saying that what happened on January 6th, 2021, there were clear warning signs about that. Joining us now to discuss the factors leading up to the siege on the Capitol and to help us unravel how we got here is Jason Stanley. He's a professor of philosophy at Yale University and an expert on fascism. His books include How Propaganda Works and, most recently, How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them. Hello, Jason. Thanks for being with us this morning on the 21st.
Thanks so much, Brian. Good to be here.
So you study fascism, propaganda. You've been following this administration, and you've been vocal about the buildup to this moment. Are you surprised by what happened yesterday at the Capitol after all that?
Oh, utterly not surprised. I mean, I have been predicting worse. So, I mean, I think we're fortunate that the military has not gone along with the president. And although law enforcement, I think we know that from various police unions and their endorsements that they have, that they've supported this administration and they would be part of any coup. I think that the military in the United States remains democratic and quite heroic.
I want to come back to the police because that's such an important element of yesterday's story and fascist movements in general, as you and others have written about. But maybe you can, can we begin with a more basic definition? Can you remind our listeners what is fascism or fascist behavior? Because I think the word, it's thrown a lot around a lot. It maybe gets confused with other words like dictator, tyranny, authoritarianism. What specifically is fascism?
Right. So we have to remember that there are different kinds of authoritarianism. Communism is an authoritarianism that is not fascist. It's a different kind of authoritarianism. Stalin murdered as many people as any dictator or authoritarian, but he was not technically a fascist. What we have is a right-wing, kind of right-wing authoritarianism. And specifically, I think it's fair to talk about the social and political movement here as fascist in character. Fascism is a cult of the leader who promises national restoration in the face of supposed humiliation by immigrants, minorities, and communists. He says that he is the face of his nation and that only he can protect the traditional family and the real members of the nation from the threat of these leftists, foreigners, and minorities.
Simple question then, is Donald Trump a fascist?
I think Donald Trump is an opportunist. I think he's going to glom on to whatever ideology will win him elections. And he recognized that in America, there's a very strong longing or yearning, as there is, are in many countries, as we've seen all around the world, India, Brazil, all countries, democratic countries run by extreme far-right leaders who one could call fascist. He saw that that is a popular ideology. I mean, after all, the Ku Klux Klan is sometimes called the first fascist organization. So it's not like the Ku Klux Klan isn't American. So when Hitler in Mein Kampf talks about his models, he says the United States is a model of the national state he seeks based on race. He talks about our immigration policies at the time, which banned Asians from being nationalized, and our racial hierarchy. And Donald Trump ran in 2016 on an anti-immigration platform, like the British fascists who ran on Britain just for the British and for halting immigration completely. And in 2020, he ran against Black Lives Matter and talked about patriotic education, an education to glorify the country rather than telling us the facts. These are fascist tactics. What's in Donald Trump's heart, I suspect, is just power. But I think it's misleading when we focus so much on what's done in Donald Trump's heart. It's kind of irrelevant. Fascism, we should think about the tactics that are involved in winning power. And we can think about unprincipled leaders who will use any tactics to gain power. And in the United States, we have a long history I don't need to tell people in the Midwest this, of racial demagoguery. We have a long history of fascist tactics of talking about our cities as filled with minorities and the real members of the nation as living in the rural areas, as connecting minorities with crime. And you know, so we've seen this all over the United States. This is U.S. history of robbing the vote from disenfranchising black voters. These are the tactics that we're seeing now. And Donald Trump is uniquely American, and he's tapping into a uniquely American ideological history that affected European fascism.
And so, as you mentioned, fascism has a history in America, and there was a time in the earlier part of the 20th century when there was thought that maybe this would be the way to go, right? This might be the better form of government, at least among some. I wonder if you can talk about yesterday's events in the context of, you know, the mind reaches for historical analogies, right? And you think of the Reichstag fire, but there's also that earlier incident in the rise in Germany of the Nazi Party. What is it, the beer hall putsch? Yes, which is like, and there were so many absurd elements yesterday that the people dressed like Vikings, but also
absurd element.
Well, tell me about this idea that, you know, it looks buffoonish. They certainly didn't seem to have a goal of like taking congressional oaths and passing laws or anything like that. So there's been this side debate about, was it a coup? Was it, you know, what do you call this? But can you put that in the context of the rise of movements like this and how events like this are central to that?
Well, let's just think about America. I come from an American frame and I draw on the long history of black intellectuals who've used the term fascism to describe the kind of forces that we see in the United States of racial supremacy and authoritarianism. So look at the Ku Klux Klan. Aren't their costumes ridiculous? Sure they are. Yeah. I mean, they're dressed absurdly. That's the point. So you don't take them seriously. So it gives them, on the one side, plausible deniability. They can say, look, you know, it's a spoof. This is a big thing among the far right internationally now, among the hard far right of the sort that you saw invading the Capitol, the sort of terroristic far right, to dress in ways that both are reminiscent of the sort of white supremacist mythos of Nordic elements. So you saw a famous picture of the guy in the Viking helmet. So that's a reference to Nordic white supremacy, which, of course, was very central to National Socialism. National Socialism involved, of course, these symbols of white of Nordic white supremacy, the swastika, supposed Aryan white supremacy, the swastika. That's what these characters are wearing. And so those were hardcore white supremacists. Obviously, we saw hardcore Nazis, really. You know, they're wearing the Viking uniforms, they're wearing the Aryan uniforms, telling you, you know, they're going back to these runes of, you know, Nordic runes and things like this. That's old school. You know, we know about the swastika. So, and in the United States, when you think about costumes, you should think about the Ku Klux Klan. So the costumes are part of it. They're part of the far right. But at the same time, I wouldn't want us to focus. I think there's a real mistake focusing just on the neo-Nazis and sort of completely other, you know, sort of people completely convinced by the extreme conspiracy theories. We need to focus on the elements inside the government that knew about this, knew it was likely, and allowed it to happen. Because when we focus so much on the sort of neo-Nazis and sort of mob, terroristic mob that invaded the Capitol, we lose sight of the fact of who enabled it, the Josh Hawleys, the Trump, the people who encouraged and enabled it. And they can then wash their hands and say, look, no, that's not us. We called for a rebellion, but we didn't mean a rebellion. when we look at the sort of Nazis who should be, of course, condemned, and the sort of people who believe that when the president of the United States told them they needed to have a an insurrection. We need to focus on the fact that the people who told them to do this and the people who made sure there were very few Capitol, there was just the Capitol Police there and didn't have the National Guard there, those people who enabled this, they're the ones who we need to be watching in the next 2 weeks.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Let me remind our listeners, if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Jason Stanley. He's a professor of philosophy at Yale University and the author of several books, including How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them. If you want to join our conversation, the number to call is 800-222-9455. If you have a question for our guest or you want to share how you are processing what happened yesterday, 800-222-9455. I'm glad you mentioned the law enforcement response again. I was stunned at how passive the Capitol Police were, especially when you consider the far less provocative actions that have gotten people killed or maimed by police officers that have been highlighted by the movement for racial justice in the last year. Are you surprised at how few people were arrested? I'm guessing the answer is going to be no. Can you talk about then if what role police typically play in countries that are moving toward fascism?
So when you have any kind of coup, be it fascist, authoritarian, or communist, or you need to look at who's in the government, who's in the law enforcement, who has the guns. Of course, there's the people on the street, the sort of mob with the guns, but you need to look at the authorities because what you have is you have people looking to see what's going to happen and they want to be on the winning side. So we saw that in the Congress and the Senate. We saw people who said, huh, maybe this is going to work. Maybe I'll throw in against democracy and I'll be a hero. So people are making bets. So in any kind of situation like this, since the president himself is encouraging a coup, there's going to be members of the government who think that maybe the president is going to be successful. And so when you have too many branches of the government, local and national, who think that the coup is going to be successful, then the coup will be successful. When you, politicians who tend to be on the side of power will look to see who's winning. So what you have in the United States is you have a lot of police. Donald Trump, since he started running for office and long before that, has called for, has allied himself and clearly signaled that he's on the side of repressive, violent military and police, which is why it's so impressive that the U.S. military has remained fully democratic. So for instance, look at who he's pardoned. He pardoned the Navy SEAL, I forget his name exactly, Ryan Gallagher.
Gallagher, yes, who was taking trophies and accused of, or maybe even convicted. I can't remember if he was accused of stabbing a teenager in Iraq. Yes.
Yeah, and sniper and various horrific things that the Navy SEALs denounced. And he pardoned him. That's a message. That's a message saying, if you violate the law in brutal ways, I'm going to be on your side. He's repeatedly told law enforcement, he's encouraged them to provoke actions. He's encouraged the sort of the white nationalist elements in law enforcement. He's clearly taken the side against reforming, obviously defunding the police, as many Democrats have too, but also reforming the police. He's pushed for greater violence. And let's remember, we are the country with the world's highest incarceration rate. So our incarceration rate parallels that of the Soviet Union in the early 50s. So we have the highest incarceration rate in the world. We're already a prison society. So he's encouraged that. So he's got a lot of loyalists among law enforcement. And that means that were a coup to be successful, he'd have a lot of local figures joining him. Now, I'm not implicating the Capitol Police here. I don't know what happened there. What's clear is that everyone with a brain knew that there was going to be a large terroristic mob there seeking to occupy the Capitol. So What I'm concerned about is, why isn't that planned for? Was that just a mistake, an oversight, or was it a deliberate method of allowing this to happen? Because there's crossed signals when the president of the United States is for a self-coup.
You know, we need to take a break in about 2 minutes, but before we do, I just want to ask, do you draw a distinction between the people who were doing yesterday's action, which seemed to be of a piece with the mob we saw in Charlottesville, Virginia, a couple of years ago, the Tiki Torch crowd? Do you draw a distinction between them and the broad mass of Trump supporters, even though a majority of Trump supporters in the Georgia exit polls of the Georgia election, for example, 3/4 of Republicans said they thought the election wasn't conducted fairly? How do you distinguish those two elements? And again, we need to take a break in about a minute now.
I would clearly distinguish those elements. You have a hardcore neo-Nazi base of support for Trump, a violent support. And then you have a bunch of Americans who are no doubt good-hearted, but for various reasons. I mean, when the president of the United States tells you that something is true and Josh Hawley and a bunch of Republicans horrifically cynically follow him and a whole news network, whole news networks are devoted to repeating lies, many Americans, despite good intentions, are going to be deeply misled.
Listeners, if you want to join our conversation, we are speaking with Jason Stanley. He's a professor at Yale University in philosophy. His book is How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them. The number to call is 800-222-9455. We want to hear how you are processing what happened yesterday at the U.S. Capitol. 800-222-9455. More to come in our conversation with Jason Stanley after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Jason Stanley, who is a Yale philosophy professor and the author of How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them. His other books include How Propaganda Works. If you want to join our conversation, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Jason, I think a lot of us conservatives and liberals, libertarians, progressives, Democrats, and Republicans across the spectrum have been desperate for a corner to turn. It was going to be Election Day. It was going to be the meeting of the Electoral College in December. Then it was going to be yesterday or ultimately this morning's congressional certification of the vote. Now people are looking to Biden's inauguration in less than 2 weeks. Is there any chance we're at the end of something, or do you see us as at the beginning of something?
I see us neither at the end nor at the beginning, because I think none of this will stop unless we address the horrifying racial injustice in the United States. because what you have is this cycle of horrific mistreatment of minority populations and disenfranchisement. Then you have rebellion against that, for understandable reasons. And then you have people running for office saying they're going to quell the rebellion. So unless we deal with these longstanding issues of massive inequality, racial and class, we're always going to be stuck in this, because demagogues will come and say, I'm going to protect you from these dangerous people. And then, of course, those demagogues, as we've seen, I often describe fascism as lawlessness in the name of law and order. They're using the security forces in lawless ways to suppress minority populations. So, and that we saw that with the role of the police. They treated these terroristic members of the terroristic mob as if they were their friends. Joanne Reed called that out in a very powerful speech on MSNBC the other day. So I think in the short term, yeah, we have to get through these 2 weeks. But in the long term, you know, we have to deal with an American cycle of disenfranchising voters, of gerrymandering, of mass police and violence and criminal injustice and wealth inequality, or else people will become ever more susceptible to the idea that their country is being taken over.
I want to go down to the phones. We have a caller on the line, Jerry from Peoria Heights. Thanks for calling in. What's your question?
Well, I was wondering his opinion on the political class, the representatives and the senators agreeing with a person such as Trump just to simply demean their job and their position.
All right. Thank you for that, Jerry. How about that, Jason Stanley? Do you think is this politician simply looking out for their own political futures, or have we turned some sort of corner with that?
Of course. I mean, this is just what happens. These are cynical. You look at those politicians, you realize those are the most dangerous politicians we have. Complete cynicism, especially Cruz and Hawley, who don't have the excuse of Turberville. I mean, Turberville recently said World War II was fought against socialists and communists. So, you know, but Hawley and Cruz are clearly just cynical, and they don't care at all about democracy or the truth. They just want power, and they're making a bet that either Trump will win this round or they will get Trump supporters and they're showing that they'll be better authoritarians than Trump. So, you know, that's why I'm saying we're not, you know, this is a long haul. This is the history of the United States. And, you know, we have these long authoritarian elements, and we have these politicians who are very clearly and very explicitly on board with any kind of anti-democratic move as long as it enables their power. So now, what we have to make sure is that these politicians get some kind of punishment or sanction for betting on the wrong horse.
We need to move on with our conversation here, but before I let you go, I want to ask you one final question. A few months ago, you were quoted on NPR as saying that America was losing its democratic status. Where are we, in your view, based on what's happened since then, in November with the election, but then yesterday in the Capitol? Or do you still feel that way?
Well, I mean, we've only been a democracy since the mid-60s, since our Black population, since the Civil Rights Act, Voting Rights Act. A lot of those protections are rolling back. We need to pay attention to voting, to disenfranchisement. That's vital. Gerrymandering of state legislatures. So it's all, but we have figures like Stacey Abrams who are registering voters and showing that on the ground, activism and presence is powerful. And that's incredibly heartening. And so, you know, lots of people in this country have never given up in the face of a much more grim past than we now face. And Stacey Abrams shows us we shouldn't give up now.
Jason Stanley is a professor at Yale University, but you don't have to be in the Ivy League to learn from him. You can read his book, How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them. Jason, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thank you so much.